In the Algonquin language, the word Connecticut means long tidal river, and in fact, the rise and fall of the tide can be detected as far up as Hartford. But it's only in the last 15 miles before reaching Long Island Sound that the tidal influence is actually great enough to shape the habitats along the river. These include extensive marshes known collectively as the tidelands, and it's where naturalist Laurie Sanders heads this week on Field Notes.
During the last 15 years, Elizabeth Farnsworth has spent thousands of hours paddling on the Connecticut River. Some of those hours could actually be considered commuting time. For many years, she studied the marshes of the lower Connecticut River, and canoeing was simply the most efficient way to reach her research plots. But most of her time on the Connecticut has been for sheer pleasure. In the year 2000, after building her own kayak, she paddled much of the river's 400-mile length. More recently, she spent most of a summer and fall exploring it to update the Connecticut River Boating Guide, Source to Sea, which was republished last year. When I asked her to take me to one of her favorite places, she chose Chapman Pond.
We've come through the Great Ditch, which is this magical entrance into Chapman Pond in the lee of Lord and Rich Islands on the main stem of the Connecticut. And you come through this narrow passage that winds through these low overhanging sycamores and big red maples. Absolutely beautiful. You could be in some bayou on the lower Mississippi. And then you come to the end of this wonderful little corridor and you open out into this view of Chapman Pond.
Chapman Pond is about a half mile down from the Goodspeed Opera House in East Haddam, Connecticut. The pond formed when the 1936 flood tore through, scouring out what had been a meadow and transforming it into the body of water we see today. For Farnsworth, the appeal of Chapman Pond comes on many levels. Beyond its beauty and peacefulness, she has fond memories of doing research here on its vegetation, and she says, even though we're only a few hundred feet away from the river, the pond is ecologically very different.
There's a diversity here of different types of habitats that I find very accessible and very alluring. But I think, to me, freshwater tidal marshes are just so exuberant. They're so alive in the middle of the summer.
As a tidewater wetland, Chapman Pond is at one end of the freshwater-saltwater gradient. It's far enough up from Long Island Sound that no salt water reaches here, but its vegetation patterns are sharply defined by the ups and downs of the tides. What that means, Farnsworth says, is that the collection of plants you find here is different than what you'd see in a marsh, say, 5 miles upriver, where the effect of the tide would be insignificant for the plants. They're also different from what you'd see 5 miles downriver, where the concentration of salt in the water and soils would determine which plants could survive. To get a better sense of the vegetation here, Farnsworth suggests we get out of the canoe and head to slightly higher ground.
Squish. I'm walking across one of the mud flats here, in and amongst the arrowleaf, on our way up into the higher shore. So it makes a really good googie sound.
From the peninsula, we can see distinct vegetation patterns. Closest to the open water are mudflats, exposed now because the tide is falling. Slightly higher up is a mixed tangle of grasses, iris, and burr reeds. Next are cattails and scattered patches of phragmites, and higher still is a swath of red maple.
It's very dramatic, and so if you were to see this from an airplane, you know, an aerial view of this marsh, you would really see the patterns of that zonation. And you'd see how diverse a marsh it is.
Back in the canoe, we cruise along the pond's edge. An osprey flies over, then a kingfisher. Red-winged blackbirds and marsh wrens sing out, and the marsh buzzes with the rhythmic calls of meadow katydids. We stop again and step out into a sea of day-glow green grasses.
That's the signature color of the wild rice, and you can spot it from an airplane, you can spot it from a mile away, because there is just nothing glows like this. And it's just an expression of how productive these systems are. Chlorophyll, man. It is chlorophyll overdose out here. It's great.
Wild rice, Farnsworth says, is a classic component of healthy freshwater tidelands, and it's the one to watch. If we were to continue paddling downriver, in about 4 or 5 miles, the wild rice would drop out and be replaced by shorter cordgrasses. Just by noticing that change, you'd know you'd reached the brackish marshes, where salt water carried in on the tide from Long Island Sound mixes with fresh water. And just a few miles further downriver, close to the confluence with the Sound, Farnsworth says you'd reach the true salt marshes, where the vegetation is adapted to surviving in extremely salty conditions. The plants in the salt marsh, she says, would be almost entirely different from the ones we're seeing here. And Farnsworth says the freshwater, brackish, and saltwater marshes of the Connecticut River are more than just pretty. The tidelands have been recognized internationally for their significance to wildlife, and they also play an important role in improving water quality and reducing storm damage and flooding. As we paddle back, we get to have a classic tidewater wetland experience. In the hour or so we've been paddling around Chapman Pond, the water level has dropped so much that in one section, the canoe gets hung up on the bottom. We have to get out and walk.
Walk in a boat out of Chapman Pond. Faster than paddling. It's a nice thing to do on a 95-degree day.
For Field Notes, I'm Laurie Sanders.
Funding for this segment of Field Notes was made possible by the Long Island Sound Futures Fund, ensuring the future of the sound through education, research, and wise stewardship. On the web at www.longislandsoundstudy.net.